This is an ABC podcast.
There were emergency warnings for bushfires in Queensland, New South Wales, South Australia and Western Australia today. But the focus is on New South Wales, with multiple emergency warnings in place. Emotions are running high, and in fire-affected Nimbin, angry residents turned on visiting politicians.
Shame on you! Your house is not burning! My house is burning down! What are you doing? Nothing!
Meanwhile, in an evacuation centre near Port Macquarie, the harp was being played to keep the hundreds of horses evacuated calm.
Yeah, so he doesn't know where he is and he's blind, so he was starting to put his foot through the bars, and I just thought, we'll see if it settles him down.
I'm Sinead Mangan, and this is Australia Wide.
I'm renting, so I have no need to defend my property. I'm not insured. I have no contents or anything. I live alone. I have some health issues. So I decided that it was better for me to be around people than to sit on my own and risk my life, basically.
And we had no phone, no electricity, no internet since Friday. And they only knew yesterday that we were safe.
Because we had to drive kilometres to try and get in reception, and we tried a few different spots and we were told there's no reception. And anyhow, the neighbours who were just in the next vehicle here, they said they rang and got reception at an earlier turn-off. So we went there and we managed to get on, didn't we?
Because you've lost power at home?
We've got nothing. No phone.
No power, no
internet,
phone.
No we internet. Had no contact with anybody. Oh.
No outside
terrifying.
Information, but we don't know whose fault that is, but there was no communication for us. We only heard by chance to evacuate. Only by a neighbour who had seen a fiery who came in and said, you've all up the Macleay, you've got to get out and go into the Kempsey showground. So we packed up and come in.
No, we're at a stage now where we're going to go. It's more serious than I thought it was. My wife's in the other car and we're going to go into Tononi, survey the situation, and then hope and pray that everyone else up in Hillville Road is doing well, but it seems to be blowing northeast.
Okay, have you in those beautiful cars there?
The cars,
but life's more important.
Part insured, part not insured, but look, what can you do? I mean, just many, many years of restoration work, and hopefully it'll all turn out well. Mind you, I have prayed. All my fingers have been crossed for everyone that's in this region.
People evacuated in the northern part of New South Wales. And that last voice you heard was Kevin Hinkling, who is leaving his Hillville home. As the day has gone by, weather conditions have got worse for the thousands of firefighters contending with bushfires in New South Wales. The Rural Fire Service has 100 aircraft deployed, but the strength of the winds has meant many have been grounded. And now the bushfire chaos has stretched to Sydney, where an emergency warning has been issued on the city's north shore. Here's the latest from New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons.
We've now got 85 fires. 46 of those fires are not contained. We've now got 14 fires at the emergency warning alert level, and we've got another 7 fires at the Watch and Act alert level. We've had a number of other new fires that have been dealt with in and around the Sydney area. We've had a fire in Tarramurra that has now dropped back to advice, and firefighters are continuing to deal with that and mop that up. We also had a small fire up in the back end of Blue Mountains at Katoomba. That fire too has now been contained. As I mentioned prior to just at the end of the last briefing, we had reports of an injury of a firefighter up at the North Rothbury fire with a cardiac arrest. Pleasingly, when the ambulance arrived, they identified that wasn't the case. It would appear to have been a case of severe heat stroke or smoke inhalation, and the firefighter had collapsed. That firefighter has been treated and is being transported for appropriate attention. We've also had another injury at the Tarramurra fire, where one of our firefighters appears to have suffered some fractures, a fracture to the arm and suspected fractured ribs. And of course, there may be other injuries occurring across fire grounds that we don't have the full details on at this stage. As I also indicated, we've had reports from the field of a number of properties being damaged and or destroyed. At this stage, the reports indicate a small number of properties, but obviously that could change as the events unfold and we get into some of these areas where the fire is spreading. Those damages that we've had reported principally linked to the Hillville fire around the Kuringat and Nabiak area and the three damaged homes in the North Rothbury fire near Cessnock. Right now we've got 18 evacuation centres set up across the fire-affected areas, and details of their individual locations are available on the website and links on the website. We need to be mindful that conditions are still continuing and are expected to continue for the coming hours, particularly ahead of the southerly change that's still moving across the state and are not expected through these fire-affected areas until much later tonight. Any questions?
Those Tarramurra fires are two at one stage, but they seem to come out of nowhere. Is there any immediate...
I think the Tarramurra fire might have been reported as two incidents, but the fire was actually at the northern end of the property there that was dealt with a fire. I could be wrong, but that was my impression.
Did they feel suspicious? Given
look, we are looking at all fires, as we do routinely. In the absence of any other obvious cause, we will never rule out suspicious activity. And we've got police very active across all these fire grounds and across the at-risk areas today. They will work very closely with fire investigators and the crime division of the New South Wales Police Force, and the appropriate investigations will be undertaken in due course.
We saw footage of fire retardant being dropped. Does that pose any danger to people on the ground?
The guidance is it'll wash down with water, and obviously, having seen some of the footage, we delivered that LAT aeroplane as an urgent dispatch to try and quell that fire and support the firefighters on the ground. Clearly, it's not only hit the mark of the fire, but it's extended into the road, and we've got crews, we've got vehicles, we've got homes, we've got property that are now coloured pink or red, and there are guidelines available, and we'll publish those guidelines on our website about hosing down and washing down the retardant. The colour is simply a dye that's added to the product so that when we drop it from aircraft, we can see where the last load has gone so that we can start building lines when it comes to firefighting. It's effectively a phosphate-based product and can be washed down and cleaned off surfaces and people fairly quickly.
We're coming into the 6 p.m. news, the 7 p.m. news, so big viewers. What would be your message that you'd want us to get out there?
The message is we still need to remain vigilant. We've been dealing with fires up the north coast. We've been dealing with new fires down around other parts of New South Wales, including the Greater Sydney environment. We need people to remain vigilant. We need people to be ready to act in accordance with their plan and any guidance or advice provided by the authorities. We've still got many hours yet of these strong, dry winds to dominate and influence weather and fire behaviour. We've still got the southerly change that's expected to move through later tonight, and certainly much later tonight across a lot of the fire grounds which are still burning up in northern New South Wales. We are watching very closely the fire north of Hawkesbury, in the north of the Hawkesbury area, burning to Putty Road. It's developing into a fairly large fire, developing a fairly significant smoke column. So we are very mindful of the potential for that fire to continue to burn and burn aggressively for some time. And that will obviously be influenced by the southerly effect as the southerly moves into Sydney, probably around about 7 or 8 p.m. tonight, close to nightfall or just after nightfall. And then, of course, all these fires up in northern New South Wales, particularly, that are still burning very actively, are going to have southerly changes hitting them when there's no longer aircraft available in the air because they're grounded at nighttime operations, and we're relying very much on firefighters and people on the ground to deal with what the southerly change will bring to fire behaviour, fire spread, and changes in the direction of that fire spread. So the last thing we can afford is for people to become complacent or be relaxed simply because we're getting towards the end of the day. There's many hours yet of high risk still to deal with.
The latest there from New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons. And you're listening to Australia-wide with me, Sinead Mangan. And some good news, the Sydney fire has since been downgraded.
ABC Australia Wide.
Country people can't be discriminated against. Not in Tumut.
They were homesick, you know, poor little lumps.
A flood is a flood and a fire is a fire and a drought is a drought.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide on ABC Radio.
Not surprisingly, emotions are running high and in fire-affected Nimbin, angry residents turned on visiting politicians.
Shame on you! Your house is not burning! My house is burning down! What are you doing? Nothing!
And an angry woman in the fire-affected parts of the northern New South Wales venting her feelings during a visit by federal opposition leader Anthony Albanese. Emotions are high as people and service struggle with catastrophic fires in New South Wales. And in a moment, we're going to chat to an academic who spent over a decade looking at how we cope and respond psychologically to the loss and stress involved in extreme bushfires.
In a moment of weakness, I said, yeah, sure, let's do 70.
ABC Australia Wide.
Adjunct Professor Jim McLennan is from La Trobe University and he's a bushfire safety researcher who spent almost a decade researching the psychology around how people respond and survive serious bushfires. As part of that research, he's interviewed the survivors of the Victorian Black Saturday bushfires and also the 2011 Lake Clifton fires in Western Australia. His research looks into how people respond and make decisions when faced by the extreme stress of natural disaster, and he joins me now. These fires, Professor McLennan, have been described as unprecedented as they press into huge parts of the New South Wales population. Does it concern you that for many people, the sheer scale of what's happening is something that they're both unfamiliar with and inexperienced with?
Yes, indeed. Just on the idea of the month being unprecedented, that isn't hyperbole. They are unprecedented in terms of where they're occurring. Historically, the hinterland of New South Wales north coast and southeast and Queensland just doesn't have a history of serious bushfire threats. Their natural hazards in the past have been all the tail end of cyclones coming down from the north, severe storms, and flooding. Bushfires just haven't been sort of, you know, part of the threat picture. But now, over the several years of elevated temperatures and reduced rainfall, what was previously moist soils and luxuriant vegetation have now become dry soils and dry vegetation, which is quite flammable. And this change means now that severe bushfires are very much part of the picture.
There's been much talk in the media about climate change and bushfires, and I think we'll leave that to one side. I'm kind of interested in what that means in terms of being prepared. If these areas are, it's just not something, as you said, historically they've had to deal with. How do you feel they're prepared for what's going on?
Undoubtedly, the overall levels of both preparation and also sort of mental readiness to effectively survive this new threat, the levels of readiness are going to be low overall, simply because hitherto bushfire hasn't been part of what has to be contended with.
Professor Jim McLennan, you've looked an awful lot at that in terms of an emergency warning when the Rural Fire Service or whichever agency is involved in that particular fire ask people to leave their properties and get to safer ground. Many choose not to. Psychologically, why is that?
Different reasons for different people. For most folk who don't immediately start getting ready for evacuation, they go into a kind of let's wait and see mode. For most people, both leaving and staying are very unattractive when there's a possible bushfire threat. You don't want to leave and find that your house burned down just because you left a wooden garden chair against the house and an ember caught it and you lost the house. Whereas if you stayed, you might have been able to, well, you would have been able to prevent that. On the other hand, you don't actually want to be caught in a raging bushfire. So there's a kind of indecisive paralysis until something happens to actually jolt you into action, to doing something. And sadly, over the years, for some people, that jolt has come too late and they don't make it.
For those that stay put, in your interviews of some of the more serious events in Australian history, do they regret it?
Yes, the overwhelming number of people that we interviewed over the years and the fires, we had a standard question that if an event like this was to threaten you again, would you do the same thing? And most of the people, not all, but most of the people who stayed said, well, no way. We wouldn't want to go through that again. The exception to those people are the ones who generally were farmers or had an agribusiness or some other business where a decision had been taken well in advance that in the event of fire, the property would be defended, and very thorough preparations were made, and they were successful. Those people, most of them, said that yes, we'd do it again, but they're in the minority. The folk that we interviewed who just simply had ordinary houses on the urban bushland fringe who stayed and defended and obviously survived, most of them said they just wouldn't do it again. They had no idea what it was going to be like and they wouldn't put themselves in that situation ever again.
What about the converse for those, I suppose, if you want to put it in a fight or flight kind of situation, for those that decided to flee, do they regret the loss of properties and things, or do you think when you interview them, have they said on reflection it was the best idea?
Interestingly enough, quite an appreciable percentage of them said that they'd stay. Now, that's interesting, and I think most of those cases they'd left. Their house wasn't burned, nor were their neighbours. And my sort of recollections of these were generally their particular location had been spared the worst of it, so to speak, which leads me to think that if there'd been more damage close to their house, then they might perhaps not have been so blasé about, next time we'll stay.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
And you're with me, Sinead Mangan, and that was Adjunct Professor at La Trobe University, Jim McLennan. Now, huge numbers of people have chosen to evacuate, and some of them have evacuated with their animals. To house them is a mammoth task. Emma Seosian visited Heather Lattimore at the Wahope Large Animal Evacuation Centre on the New South Wales Mid-North Coast, where there are now hundreds of animals, both large and small, and locals supporting each other.
We have over 300 horses now.
What other sorts of animals are here?
We have cows, which are over in the ring. We've got chooks, we've got alpacas, we've got pigs, sheep, cats, dogs, goldfish, parrots, you name it. We've got every pet possible.
I guess it's, it must be a lot of concern among the owners that keep their animals safe.
There is, yes. Obviously they're quite distressed and, yes, it's very concerning for them. So
you're finding the community sort of rallying together?
It's been wonderful. I couldn't ask for a nicer community to live in, actually. Sorry, I'm a bit teary. We've had been inundated with, sorry.
No, that's okay.
Donations. People that are in here that have bought their animals, they're just tripping in and helping. It's absolutely fantastic.
And I see a lady in the background here even playing a harp to keep the horses calm.
Yes, yep. And yesterday afternoon we had a fellow come and volunteer to have karaoke and had music just playing over in our bar area for people to listen to, just so there was a bit of music in the background for them. And as you know, we've got people up in the hall that are sleeping in the hall, and we've got lots of ladies up there helping cook meals, and we've been doing breakfast, lunch and dinners, and obviously, you know, we've had lots of cold water for everyone, making sure everyone's hydrated. So
wonderful. You're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Emma Seosian chatting to Heather Lattimore at the Wauchope Showgrounds. Across the way at the showgrounds, Michael Kavanagh spoke to Dr. Carol Booth, who was the lady with the harp.
Finding someone playing a harp in the middle of the Wauchope Showground with the bushfire emergency is unusual. Dr. Carol Booth, who is retired, she's hung up a stethoscope, but she's come to the showground with her four horses owned by her and a partner. Carol, why the harp?
Because he was kicking up his blind. And
this is Oscar, the gelding that's sitting here on the other side of the fence.
Yeah. So he's, you know, he doesn't know where he is and he's blind, so he's starting to put his foot through the bars, and I just thought, well, see if it settles him down.
Well, it certainly calmed him down. Now, he's blind. You've got three others, all mares. You've brought them up. You live at Lawn. Why have you brought them up?
Well, because the fire's at John's River, and all that's between us is middle brother, and it's all bush, and our property is bush. And we didn't know how long it would take to get him on the float base.
When you go back to your property, is there going to be a point now where possibly there will be an evening recital to the horses?
Well, I hadn't tried playing for him before until he started, you know, putting his foot through the bars and so on. We'll see. But I play in palliative pet care, so...
And it does serve the savage beast, they say?
Seems to be serving this one.
Certainly very relaxing. That's Dr. Carol Hope... Sorry, Booth, at the Wauchope Showgrounds on the New South Wales Mid-North Coast, and she was speaking to Michael Kavanagh.
You're listening to Australia Wide.
I didn't know Melbourne much. I knew where the racecourses were.
I'm making signs for the sleepy lizards.
Basically less eggs this year than what we would have expected.
The houses that are near the edge of the bush, they might encounter a snake up to four times a year, a death adder.
See how it goes.
On ABC Radio.
And you're with me, Sinead Mangan. There are grave fears for the koala population of New South Wales' mid-north coast, with concerns over 350 of the animals may have died in fires over the last few weeks. South in Taree, the lounge room of Christine and Paul McLeod's house has become a makeshift burns unit. The husband and wife team behind Koalas in Care are treating koalas that have been injured or left homeless by the bushfires raging around the town. At the moment, they have 24 koalas in their house, and the couple are not vets, just passionate and committed volunteers. 7:30's Nadia Daly spoke to Christine and Paul as they are treating another patient.
So how's this one going? What sort of damage has been done?
He's been very badly affected. All his paws are burnt, his nose, his chin... all his fur's been scorched. He's also, prior to the fire, it's obvious that he's got conjunctivitis, which doesn't make it any easier for his recovery. So we've got a compromised animal to start with before we even get to the burns.
So are you both... veterinarians?
Or? Yep. Yeah. We've just been doing this for 27 years now. And
why do you do it?
Because somebody has to look after them, because nobody else is doing too much as far as the government and in protecting their habitat and protecting them. So we do this and hope that we can save some of them.
Reporter Nadia Daly speaking to Christine and Paul McLeod from Koalas in Care in Taree in New South Wales. And you can see more on that story on tonight's 7:30 programme or by visiting the ABC 7:30 website. To stay up to date on the bushfires in New South Wales, please stay listening to ABC Radio and ABC News. ABC News Online has a live blog compiling all the latest information from emergency services and from the Firefront, so you can visit the new website to stay up to date, and it constantly updates. It's well worth having a look at. And remember, you can visit the Fires Near Me map at rfs.nsw.gov.au. It will give you the latest details on the current fires in New South Wales. That's all from the Australia-wide team for today. I'm Sinead Mangan. I hope you stay safe. Cheerio.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.